Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here in Money, Riches, and Wealth. And I have no co-host tonight, but I do have a great guest for us tonight. We're not taking calls tonight. We're going to be just talking to our guests. And there's a reason we're not going to take calls and just talk to our guests, because there's a lot of information that a lot of our listeners can gather and really make a difference in their personal finance, because our guest tonight is Larry Kotlikoff. And Larry's an economist, Boston University. But let me just tell you the highlights of why I really greatly appreciate the time that he's going to give us tonight, talk about his new book, Money Magic. And that is that, you know, a few years ago, I think it was a good 10 years or so ago, Larry was the one that led the charge in the United States to help people understand how to maximize their Social Security. And it's a software that our company has used many times, Maximize My Social Security, and try to figure out the strategy that would help people to get the most out of Social Security that they could. A lot of people were just claiming Social Security at 62 and not realizing that if you use some of these strategies, you could get a lot more money out of Social Security. And even today, even though that a lot of the strategies have been stripped out of Social Security to some degree with the 2015 changes, there's still a lot of strategies that you can implement and maximize Social Security. Larry talks about that in this book. But this book, this time, is a lot more than just Social Security. He goes into all kinds of things: career planning, retirement planning, Social Security, tax planning, how to buy houses, marriage, divorce, going to college, and investing. He hits them all. And he hits pretty much all the highlights topics with a lot of great thought-provoking and beneficial information to help you to maximize in your personal finances. And, you know, since our firm is a fee-only firm, that's why we wanted to bring Larry in to talk about all these different ideas, because, what we do is we just try to bring the best information to our clients as a fiduciary for in their best interest. So with that, let me just bring Larry on. Larry, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you so much for that lovely introduction.
Well, you've done a lot for helping a lot of people, make a lot more money just with the Social Security advice. Now you come out with this book, Money Magic, and you've got a new software program that you're helping people use, and advisors like ourselves. We're not using it yet, but we're looking at it. It's called Maxify. I thought it would be great to talk about this, but let me just start with how did a frog get you into economics? That's not the normal course of learning economics.
Yeah, that's the first preface, first paragraph in the book and the preface. I was thinking about being a doctor when I went to college at the University of Pennsylvania. That was back in 1969. I'm a child in the 60s. I thought that would be a fun profession, but then I had to take introductory biology that involved dissecting a frog, and I think we had to put acetylcholine on the frog's heart, so we had to basically somehow numb up the frog, inject it somehow, it was kind of tied down, open up its heart, slice open its chest, find its heart, put these drops on it to kill it, and then rub its heart back to life, and then the instructor would come over and say, "Hey, great job, do it again." So we had to do it like 30 times. And by the end of that class, I was an economics major.
I don't blame you, sir. I just remember the smell of the dead frogs that we had to dissect in high school. It was disgusting, let alone poor frog bringing it back to life all the time. But you talk about lots of ways to buy happiness in the book. That you're saying that you don't have to be a gazillionaire to use your money and gain happiness. And, I thought that was an excellent point that you were making there.
Yeah, I'll just expand on it. Just really briefly, so the book's trying to convey the economics approach to financial planning, and economists have been studying personal finance really going back for 100 years to the work of the top economists of the early 1900s was Irving Fisher of Yale University, and he developed this life cycle theory of consumption and spending and saving. And the basic idea, so there's four basic points to the economics approach, which is the first one is you've got out of your resources, out of the acorns you've got, you want to consume them so that you can keep on spending, consuming them through time. So you want to do consumption smoothing is the way we call this. So you want to save out of your acorns, out of your income, out of your resources so that there's an ability to spend at the same level in retirement adjusted for inflation. So we're talking about maintaining everybody's living standard in the household. So that's part one. So you got consumption smoothing. You got to deal, of course, with cash flow constraints, and economics says that, and so, you know, talk about that in the book. But so part two is raising your living standard safely, finding ways, and you mentioned a few of them, and the book's chock full of different ways, none of which involve engaging in any risk whatsoever, perfectly safe ways of raising your living standard that we're not taking advantage of. And a lot of these tricks are coming from economics. And then the third thing, which you were referencing, is being able to kind of price your living standard, your lifestyle decisions that can make you happier. So if you think that retiring earlier is going to make you happier, you got to understand the price in terms of your living standard of that decision. So pricing out these lifestyle decisions in terms of your living standard allows you to kind of go shopping for a lifestyle, but knowing the prices. It's like, you know, suppose you went to the grocery store and you couldn't see any prices, and after you put $100 worth of groceries into the cart, your card was immediately charged with $100. Well, you'd walk out of the store with $100 worth of groceries, but you wouldn't have $100 worth of happiness.
Right.
Because you would have bought things that were too expensive and others that were.
Yeah.
Little things that.
So it's using those concepts of economics that is going to be important, but you got to hold on with me with any other thoughts you have, because I got to take that pause at 6:14 right now, and we're going to be right back with Larry Kotlikoff. We're going to talk about a lot of great ideas that he has in his book, Money Magic.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBL.
We're back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here tonight with Larry Kotlikoff and his new book, Money Magic. And you notice I haven't done a lot of interviews in about the last year. I didn't, you know, used to do a lot of book interviews, but in the last year or two, I haven't really done it. Done many open shows where I answer your questions. But when I saw Larry's book, I said, you know, hey, every listener, if you want something, just a quick read that is going to give you a lot of great financial advice, Money Magic is it. There is no doubt about it. This is an excellent book. A lot of great information in here, a lot of great unique thought processes that you don't hear a lot from other people, and I would strongly recommend it. Larry, I'm good to be back with you again now. Let's go into the next part, but I will have to warn you in advance. This segment of the show, Larry, 6:29, I have to quit at 6:29 on the nose, okay? So you and I both have to keep an eye out. I'm not very good at this either, so you and I are going to work together to get it done.
Let me just say one last thing, and then I'm going to make my answers real quick.
Go ahead.
So, again, economics approach, long 100 years at it. We've been at it. It's smoothing your living standard. That's called consumption smoothing. You know, taking into account all your resources and all the off-the-top expenses you have to make, so your net and all the taxes you have to pay. So what's left is really your discretionary spending power, and then the idea is to smooth that over your lifetime. So that's how you figure out your sustainable spending, and then from that you figure out how much you need to save to achieve that. Then the second thing is safely raising your living standard. The third thing is pricing lifestyle decisions. The fourth thing I didn't mention yet is that you want to look at, if you're holding risky investments, how will your living standard move through time? What are the ups and the downs that you're going to experience, the trajectories? And we run, multiple, like 500 trajectories in our software to show the ups and downs of people's living standards. But you can actually kind of do this with simple arithmetic to think through what could happen. You want to see the spread of your living standard, given that you're going to be adjusting your spending in light of how you're doing on the market. So conventional financial planning says set some target for spending in retirement and then just assume you're going to keep spending it no matter what. Well, economics doesn't say that. It says you have to adjust. If the market tanks, you've got to drop your spending a little bit at least, commensurate to the drop. If it goes up, you get to spend more. You don't just ignore what's happening to your resources. So this living standard kind of level and spread is going to help you figure out how much risk you want to take on with your investing and also how aggressively to be spending through time. Because if you spend, assuming you're going to make 8% for sure in the market, and then you're 80 and it turns out the market's not doing so well, then you're in for a big drop. Then you're going to have to drop your living standard dramatically. And so we want to adjust along the way, but we also want to be cautious about our spending.
Right.
So those are the four things that economics brings to the table.
Yeah, and you know, what's really cool right now, Larry, is that so many people are being freed up from geographic locations because of, you know, the baby boomers are retiring and they're financially independent. They can go live anywhere they want. But also with the new, digital economy, let's call it, people are being freed up to be able to live wherever the heck they want to. And that is a big economic issue, is how do you decide, should I move or should I stay? Is it best to stay where I am or should I be moving somewhere else? And you actually talk about that in this book and how your software helps people to figure that out.
Yeah, so I looked at this with my wife in the middle of COVID. We were, I just tell you a personal story. We're living in Boston in a nice back bay. Condo, beautiful condo, but small, 960 square feet. And, we couldn't really, we were trapped inside.
That was probably $3 million, too, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't $3 million, but.
It's expensive.
It was worth it. Yeah, those are expensive. And so we were kind of going a little bit stir crazy. You go 960 square feet, not a lot of space, no yard. We had a small balcony. So my wife started looking around and she found this place in Providence. A house that's 301 years old, 1720. And we came down. I was very reluctant to leave Boston and looked at the place and said, well, it's not Boston, it's Providence. And then we started looking at the economics, and the price per square foot was a third of the price in Boston of our condo. So we ended up selling our condo, buying a house that has 1,600 square feet, so we got more space, we got a backyard. We have neighbors that actually came by the first day and brought presents, and, you know, it was just like a story out of, you know, a different world than I was.
How far is Providence from Boston?
So it's like an hour, so I have to commute, and each way.
But do you do that every day, or do you only do it a couple days?
A couple days a week when I teach or some meetings, maybe three times. But it's not the end of the world. I can get work done in the car by talking to people. And so I just adjust. And when I take the train, after COVID's over, I'll take the train and get more work done. So, yeah, you know. And
it won't be long before autonomous cars will be driving you there.
Exactly. And I think we calculated using the software. But, again, the book tells you how to do calculations just with arithmetic. The book's not about selling the software, because most people don't want to run software. It mentions the software like twice, the very beginning at the very end of the book, but nothing else. But it shows you how to make all the calcs just with arithmetic.
Sure.
We were able to raise our living standard by about 12% for the rest of our lives. Now, that's, you know, we're both around, I'm 71, my wife's 62, so on average we're about, you know, we've got about 70 years left to go if we live to our maximum age of life. So for the next 70 years, we can have, if we all both live for 70 years, just making this move would raise our living standard by 12.5% year in and year out for the next 70 years.
And that's the kind of stuff you're talking about in this book.
Yeah, no risk.
Yeah.
No risk whatsoever.
And you also talk about in careers, you know, people are always, oh, I got to go to college. I got to go, I'm going to get more money if I go to college and so forth. And is that really the best way to do it in today's world?
No, it's not necessarily. 70% of American kids.
And you're a professor.
I'm a professor. I went to grade schools. I went to the University of Pennsylvania for college. I went to Harvard for graduate school. But 70% of the kids in this country, and if you look at Switzerland, it's more like 75%, don't graduate from college. They go into the trades eventually. But a lot of kids feel pressure to get a college degree, and they feel somehow like they're second-class citizens if they don't achieve that. But and then they borrow a huge amount of money. But 40% of the kids who start college don't finish.
So that's amazing.
So we have a chapter, there's a chapter in the book called Don't Borrow for College. Because I looked at this and I said, who in God's name would, who in the Lord's name would borrow to invest in something that has right off the bat a 40% chance of producing nothing, of generating, of losing everything?
All right, we're down to that five-second call here. we got 5 seconds until we go to 6:29. So I got to run right now, Larry. I'm going to be right back.
Money, riches, and wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Larry Kotlikoff. His book, Money Magic, and it is worth every penny of it. I would strongly recommend, if you're interested in financial planning and good ideas of how to maximize what you have, you need to get this book, Money Magic. And Larry, let's go through some of the big points. I mean, you got lots of chapters, lots of good things here. So careers, you say you can be a plumber, make more money than a doctor. So why wouldn't you consider that?
Yeah, the first chapter is called My Daughter the Plumber. The old Jewish mother expression was my son, the doctor. but the plumbers actually can, not all plumbers and not all doctors, but, you know, on average, plumbers can make more over the lifetime than a doctor when you take into account all the costs the doctor experiences. They have to go to school for 4 years, college, and then medical school, and then they've got 3 years of residency and internship. They finally get out and start earning a good salary, and they're treated like they've had been high earners their entire life because they're immediately in a high tax bracket, high marginal as well as average tax bracket, and they're there for the rest of their days in terms of high taxation. So, and then you've got to borrow at the federal, at very high interest rates, remarkably high, that are being offered, the best rates are being offered by the federal government. But they're incredibly high. They're usurious, really. And then there's a lot of risk because if you can't cut it as a doctor, you're saddled with huge amounts of debt that you can't discharge through bankruptcy. They'll take it out of your Social Security check when you're 99 if you haven't repaid your student debt. So I talk about, the importance of thinking about alternatives, the fact that we have so many kids that are not necessarily going down that professional track, that and that there's ways to get a college degree and even get a professional degree that don't involve indenturing yourself to Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
I talked about, for example, somebody wants to go into quantum computing. He's 18 years old, fascinated by computers, but it comes from a poor family, maybe middle class family, because poor kids are actually able to go to college on the cheap because they get a lot of grants and scholarships. But it's really the middle class, upper middle class kids who have to pay a lot. So they've got the disadvantage when it comes to college. So suppose the kid goes to community college and takes online courses to get a certificate and to get a grade, and he does it at Harvard online programs and Stanford and Yale and MIT and Chicago and Boston University. All these schools have very inexpensive programs, and then he shows up after 4 years having no student debt, going to a community college, getting an MBA from a community college, and he applies to IBM. He says, look, here's my 20 certificates. They're all A's. They're all graded. And they're all quantum computing. And is IBM going to hire him, or is IBM going to hire the Williams College graduate who majored in English?
Right.
Hire the guy with all these certificates from all these top schools, I think. So I think, as you said, we have to take into account the new technology, that things are changing, and we have opportunities now that we didn't before. And certainly getting a first-rate education from top schools on the cheap is eminently feasible these days, given online education.
Absolutely. And with online education, I think it's even going to get cheaper. But let's go on to another topic, life expectancy. You're saying you better be planning to age 100, maybe even 110, not to age 80 or 90 in your life expectancy. And this is one of the big reasons why you're telling people, don't be collecting Social Security at 62. Wait until you're 70, and that most people should wait until they're 70.
Yeah, we have great, fantastic longevity risks. It's one of our major, it's the largest financial risk that retirees face. Most people take Social Security at before age 70. Only 6% take it at 70. About 85% of households should be waiting, or individuals should be waiting till 70. Only 6% are waiting. Why should you wait till 70? Well, your retirement benefit is going to be 76% higher adjusted for inflation than if you take it at 62, 76% higher. So you're giving up a lower benefit for 8 years by waiting. There's no risk here.
Let me throw that one thing at that, and I know how I answer this question, but let's hear how you answer this question. The thing that they always will throw at you right here, Larry, is, yeah, but Social Security is going bankrupt in 2035 or something like that, and so I'm getting my money now. Go ahead.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Well, even if, I've run simulations in our software and written columns about this question. So our software lets you specify cuts in Social Security benefits starting in any year by any percentage. So even if you contemplate a 25% cut in benefits starting in 10 years from now and continuing forever, you're still far ahead of the game if you wait till 70, because whether you go early or late, your benefits are still going to be cut. Now, so the advantage of waiting is smaller, but it's still very substantial. And then the other thing is that politically speaking, I think they're going to raise taxes on benefits, but they're not going to be cutting benefits. So because there's too many, that's going to cost too many politicians, too many votes of people who, when it comes to election day, have nothing better to do than to vote because they're retired. The young people don't vote. That's the importance of why, that's the reason why the politicians are courting the elderly so assiduously, not because they like older people, it's because they get them to, they know they're going to vote. So when you give up benefits for sure for 8 years, you get a 76% higher adjusted for inflation. That stream, a higher 76% higher dollar amount is every year going to go up because of a COLA adjustment. You're in effect buying an inflation indexed annuity. And the payment is the 8 years of benefits that you've given up, and the annuity you're buying is the additional stream of income that's inflation indexed. And we need to realize that we have to plan for to live to our maximum age of life, that we're not going to necessarily die on time. Nobody's going to die on time. And life expectancy really has no relevance for anybody. That's one of the things I say in the book. We should never, nobody should be thinking they're going to die, should be thinking whatsoever about life expectancy. That's a concept that's important maybe for an insurance company. They can play the averages, but we can't play the averages. We're going to die on one day only, and it could be at age 100. And the biggest fear we have really should be outliving our money, living on cat food at 90, 95. So we want, now what economics says is, so you have to plan, your planning horizon has to be to your maximum age of life, not to your expected age of life. And then, but you can, if you're not super risk averse or super concerned about having your living standard decline, take an educated gamble that you're not going to make it that long, and plan, systematically plan to have your living standard gradually decline from maybe like age 80 to 100 by maybe 1% a year. So by 100, you're living at 25% less. But there's many things you're not going to be doing at 100, like skiing or traveling or, you know, buying new cars. And, of course, there's other expenses you have to worry about, like, you know, out-of-pocket healthcare expenses. They're kind of like taxes. They're fixed expenses, and that's part of your planning. That you have to plan for that as well to be cautious. But your discretionary spending, you can plan to have that decline.
Right. So let's go on to one more topic before we have to take our last break, and that is you and I both agree the greatest of all benefits that you can have is a health savings account. You talk about that in the book also.
Yeah, because you get to put the money in tax-free. You earn the money, but you don't have to pay taxes on it when you put it in.
But believe it or not, there are a lot of our listeners, as much as I talk about them, a lot of our listeners don't even know what a health savings account is. And unfortunately, a lot of employers still don't offer the high deductible HSA qualified plan. So explain to everyone what an HSA is and why they should love this thing.
Yeah, if your employer has a health plan where there's a high deductible, maybe like $5,000, $6,000 a year, which a lot of employers have, Boston University has, for example, one of these, then if you're not taking Social Security, you can contribute up to, I think it's about $5,000-$6,000 a year, and the money that goes in is tax-free, tax-exempt. So if you're earning $100,000 and you put in $6,000 in the HSA, you're going to pay taxes on $94,000 rather than on $100,000. And then when you take the money out to spend on qualified medical expenses, out-of-pocket expenses like deductibles, like co-pays, like co-insurance, like drugstore prescription fees, like, you know, anything, medical devices, that can be paid for right out of the HSA using your HSA card. And it's just like a debit card. And there's no taxes that come due on the withdrawals.
Right, so, and the cool thing about this one is it's cumulative, right?
Yeah, you can leave the money in that account. It'll grow, and then and it'll grow with no interest and no taxes on the accumulated return. And you can spend the money when you're 90 and accumulate it at 40.
Yeah,
absolutely. So it's fantastic. Lifetime tax saving device. Go ahead, sorry.
It's the coolest, you know, and but a lot of people confuse it with the flexible spending medical deduction. That one's only a $500 a year rollover. That's ridiculous. I don't even waste my time with that. Health savings accounts, that's the thing. But Larry, you got to hold with me. We're going to come back, talk about some last few things, marriage, divorce, investing. I mean, you got it all in here. That's what I love about it. But right now I got to go to traffic and we'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're here with Larry Kotlikoff. And we've got Money Magic is his book, and we're running out of time quickly here. A great guest, always runs quickly. Larry, two of my favorite chapters in your book was getting married and, you know, figuring out how to get divorced economically, logically. And I thought those were excellent chapters. Why don't you give us a little bit 101 on that?
Sure. I think one chapter is Married for Money and the other is Divorce Without Divorce War. So, you know, when we marry, it's a huge financial decision. It's not just an emotional decision, psychological one, but we have to think about, are we taking on somebody's debts? Or are we taking on somebody who needs a financial, you know, we have, it's really a market where, and you can see that on Match.com or Tinder, all these different websites that people are really marketing themselves, and they're also marketing their financial capacity to bring in, to support their spouse. So we should think about very carefully about, are we entering into a situation where we're, you know, getting value for the money that we are bringing to the match? We have to think about the financial impact of this on our living standard. We might be marrying somebody. So if you have two people, you know, Joe and Jack, and they're equally interesting a lot, and you like them both, maybe Jack makes twice as much money. Well, you should really prefer Jack over Joe, or maybe Jack makes twice as much money, but he's not as desirable as Joe, but maybe he's on other dimensions, but maybe the fact that he has twice as much of an income makes them more desirable. So I want people to be a little hard-nosed about this because the divorce rate is very high, and people, it's like, you know, 40-50%. I talk about the point that if you get married, you should do it with a prenup. You should do it assuming that you will get divorced. Think through, and then because the prenup can actually maintain your marriage, as crazy as that sounds, but it's not just to protect you from divorce. It's really to help sustain your marriage so that one party doesn't kind of expropriate the other party or think they can in the context of being married. And then the divorce chapter of Divorce Without Divorce War, I talk about the fact that the big thing you have to decide is not who's going to get to take the pet dog or the particular, you know, painting that both sides love. It's before you get into any of that, just think about what should be the relative living standard of the two parties going forward. If you've been married for a couple of weeks, then it should be that, you know, you just walk off with your marbles that you came with, and the game's, you know, you go back to where you were. But if you've been married for 20, 30 years, and you think that a reasonable thing is that each party should have the same living standard, then the ratio is 1-to-1. If one person's going to work much longer, much harder, then the ratio might be more like 1.25-to-1. So figure that out. Think about that relative living standard ratio, and then everything else will fall into line, because now you've got two people working together. Because once you've got that fixed, that ratio fixed, now you want to both work together to make decisions about divorce that will lower your taxes as single people in the future, and that will allow you both to have a higher living standard, because you're two living standards are locked together in a 1.25-to-1 ratio. So there's lots of tricks for marrying, getting divorced successfully and not going to divorce war. And that's destroying so many families. You've got, you know, kids who cannot end up not talking to one of the two parents. It's terrible. I mean, we have to get married knowing that we're likely to get divorced. We have to take a risk-averse perspective on this. 40% or more are going to get divorced. And you get remarried, the divorce probability is higher, around 56%. And the third time you get married, the probability is even higher. So
yeah. So, Larry, one of the things I wanted to kind of finish on, because we only got about four or five minutes left at the most, is you made the statement in the book that the majority of the financial services, financial advisory industry is using superficial financial advice to sell product, and they are not using, economic advice to really help people enhance their personal finances. And I agree wholeheartedly with that. That's why I wanted to have you on the show.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I think that most financial planners, almost everybody I've met, is not just out to try and gouge the public, but the industry, which is really dominated by the firms, the large firms on Wall Street, have come up with a methodology that no economist would teach in any class, in any top university around the country, or around the world, really. And it's a methodology that's geared to do a bait and switch to sell product. And I discussed that bait and switch in the book. It has nothing to do with the four things of smoothing your living standard, raising your living standard, pricing your lifestyle decisions, and then understanding your living standard risk from investing. None of those four elements are taught in any, no economics-based financial planning is taught for even 10 minutes in the Certified Financial Planner degree program or any of the other certificate programs. So we have a complete disconnect, but I think financial planners themselves, first of all, there's the fee-only ones like you who are, not into product sales or into helping plan, but they're kind of stuck with these third-rate tools which are oriented towards product sales, but then they apply common sense. They say, look, here's what the plan. I don't love this computer program. It's coming out with X, but I'm going to suggest Y because I know that X is not the right answer for this client who's wants to spend $200,000 and is saving nothing and will be lucky to be able to spend $80,000 in retirement.
Right.
So ultimately, economics is really common sense. It's based on the physiology of a squirrel, that squirrels get hungry in the winter and people get hungry when they're retired. And we need to protect ourselves from those, we have to be able to maintain our living standard across time, but also across times, good times and bad times. It's very fundamental. It's all about your living standard in good times and bad times and over time. And conventional planning is not at all about that. It's about how much wealth can you accumulate and die so that the planner who's charging fees on your wealth holdings can collect as much fees as possible and potentially leave you at risk. But again, I don't think that most financial planners are.
And they're not bad people. There's no doubt about that.
No, they're not.
It's just the culture. The culture of the industry is the problem. But in this last minute, I just want to say that this book, just page 276, you got 50 ideas that can help you with your money management ideas alone. Is the 50 ideas is a great thing that anyone would benefit from with this book. So I really thank you for putting this together and providing it to the public as a whole.
Thanks so much for having me, and happy to come back to talk about anything through time. And everybody stay healthy out there. And hopefully we won't be in World War III at the end of the week.
These things happen. They've been happening for hundreds and thousands of years, my friend, So it always is interesting to watch, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You were alive and I was alive during the Bay of Pigs, I remember being a little kid at St. Mary's Govan's, and they'd make us sit underneath they'd pull the blinds down, make it black out in the room, and we're under the thing. And I'm thinking, how's this going to help if a nuclear bomb goes off,
Right. Khrushchev was a lot more rational than Putin, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, that's probably true.
He sounded crazier, but he was a lot more Putin. But maybe Putin will come around.
That is true, my friend. Anyway, on that happy note, I say thank you again, Larry. We've got to go, and I really appreciate all that you've done in writing this book, Money Magic. And this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.